folks, this is All Things Product with Petra Wille
and Teresa Torres.
And we're so happy you're here.
Hey, Petra, I want to ask you about a question I get all the time. It's probably going to sound pretty familiar. A product manager comes and says, I have a backlog of 4,000 things. I'm behind on my roadmap. Literally, a stakeholder comes to me every day with a new idea. I don't know where to put it. And I keep reading about all these prioritization models like ICE and RICE and MICE, and there's probably VICE and
NICE.
Now I'm just making them up. What should I do?
Who? That's an easy question.
Oh, yeah.
Quick recommendation, avoid prioritization at all costs. But no, let me unpack that a bit. Okay, so first of all, you said like it's 4,000 backlog items, and maybe it's more like 400, but let's assume it's a lot of backlog items. Maybe the product person inherited that backlog. It's in Jira somewhere. There are a lot of items there that are like 10 years old, something like that, right? So this is what we, sadly enough, oftentimes still have in many, many organizations. You and I know that if we see such a setup, that it's more of a feature factory-like setup. So it's more an organization where we have an IT department still. And that basically stuff get into the backlog by highest paid person opinion or anything like that, right? So, and I've been there myself. It's a miserable situation to be in. So how could a product person possibly get out there? And in the first episode that we released, we unpacked a bit of how you should avoid changing your organization too much because maybe it's not worth your energy. So go back and listen to that episode if you're interested in that. But let's assume for the time being you want to make your life a bit easier as a product person. What could you do? And this framing of avoid prioritization at all costs comes from a point where I think, like, if an organization has an ideal setup, so there is a good company vision and a good company strategy, and from there is a good product vision and product strategy for your particular product derived. And then you have goals that really help you track if you're executing the strategy and the things that you need to improve. So business metrics, more revenues, whatever you're currently doing. Then oftentimes it's not so hard to prioritize because the teams then end up with 5 or 6 opportunities. They do a bit of discovery. They use maybe your opportunity solution tree, and they will figure out which ones are the best bets, the biggest opportunity, the more meaty opportunities. And they know that because of they run some experiments, right? So this is the ideal life of a product manager, but that's not what a lot of people are finding themselves in, right? And in this world, you don't have to prioritize a lot, because you just compare and contrast a few opportunities based on some research, based on some experiments, and then basically reality tells you which ones you go after. Most likely you succeed with that if you have done a proper product discovery. But now you are more in this feature factory layer. So how do you prioritize your 400 backlog items? And there you need different tactics. But before we unpack those ones, anything to add? Did I miss anything so far, Teresa?
I think one thing I'll just say is that, like, on the face of it, compare and contrast sounds a lot like prioritizing. But I think the difference is when you're prioritizing a list of 400 things, you can't compare and contrast 400 things. Like,
exactly. That's
comparing
impossible.
And contrasting is about understanding the trade-offs, right? Every decision has trade-offs. In one place, we're compromising this thing. In the other case, we're compromising this other thing. How are we weighing our options and really diving deep and comparing and contrasting? And when we're comparing and contrasting 3 things, for example, we can actually run some assumption tests and collect data. And our comparing and contrasting isn't based on a series of assumptions. Whereas when I see people put 400 items in a spreadsheet and they're ranking them on impact and confidence and whatever effort, they're just made up numbers. Like, they're not based on reality. They're just everybody's opinion. And then we're making it sound like it's this math formula that told us the right answer. but it's garbage in, garbage out. Yeah. So I just wanted to distinguish that a little bit. And then let's get into, exactly. Okay, but so what? I work at an organization and I have 400 things. What do I do?
Yeah. So now we're getting really practical and tactical. So one easy fix is, and it sounds hard, but usually it's easier to implement than people would think, and that is auto closing of old tickets. So that's usually one of the first things that I recommend. Yeah, but it's usually not so hard. So if a ticket is in your backlog for more than a year, you're most likely not touching it anytime soon. So what I implemented in all of the product teams that I was working with directly back in the days when I still was a product manager was like, we auto-close the ticket. Jira can do it, for example. And you send a nice and polite message to the person opening the ticket that says like, if this is still a thing, reopen the ticket. But you need to comment why this is still a thing. And most people can't. They don't even remember that they created a ticket. So most people won't. And that gets you rid of, at least I would say, from your 400 backlog items, 100 are gone, maybe even 200 of them gone.
Love it. Just get rid of them.
It's just get rid of them, especially the ones. And then that's the next kind of grooming exercise, is the ones that none of the people in the team understand. Close them. If you cannot find a single soul in your product development team, not the developer, not the user researcher, not the quality assurance person, not the product person, understands what the ticket is all about, close it. Again, friendly message to the person, open it up and say like, hey, you know where my desk is. Maybe they don't these days, but you know where my Slack channel is. And just let me know. And I'm super happy to have that conversation. Oftentimes they're not, if you put up this email in the right way, right?
This sounds a lot like the inbox zero strategy with email, where you just declare bankruptcy and you send an email to everybody saying, I'm sorry, my inbox got too crazy. If your email still matters, feel free to resend it.
Yeah, exactly. So this is what we do, not to all of the tickets. You could do that, but I find that super radical, too radical. But this auto-close for tickets that are older for a year than a year and close to stuff that nobody understands usually does help a lot. And then I really recommend themes, and you can call them epics. If you're not using epics, if you use epics for the more technical stuff, then call them themes, or you call them initiatives. So that is something. So group them, that helps. And another thing that I always try to do, and usually in the tools you use color coding for that to some extent, is user groups. So whom are we doing this for? That we get a vague understanding of, oh, 80% of our backlog is targeting a target group that we're not supposed to target because this other team is actually tasked to work for them. So realizations like that are possible once you color coded your user group, that you try to help solve a problem with the stuff in your backlog, right? And that already gives it a lot of structure. And then, if possible, and if your environment allows, do a bit of discovery around these themes and these user groups. Because now you can actually write hypotheses or assumptions for these user groups and themes. And then you can see what are the big, because then now maybe you have a theme and user group and you only have four things in this particular color coding and bucket. Then the compare and contrast thing can come into play, because now we do a bit of discovery. We understand better what we're looking at here. Is it apples? Is it potatoes? And how much effort might it be? Is it a quarter of our team's work, or is it more a year of our team's work, or is it a week or a day of our team's work? It's never a day, by the way, pro tip. That really does help. So give it a bit of structure, and initiatives is a good idea. If there are no goals at all, and if there's no strategy at all, oftentimes there is a strategy somewhere and it has strategic themes. You could use them and see if that helps, and user groups. So that's the two layers that I usually like to use for organizing. Is it ideal? No. Is it better than prioritizing 400 random items? Hopefully, yes.
Okay, I'm going to have a little aside on your it's never one day, and then
please.
I'm going to share how I do it a little bit differently, but I think we end up in the same place. So my aside about it's never just one day, I'm actually living this personally right now. Just last night, I was on a call like late in the afternoon, and I uncovered a pretty significant problem with how we store things in a database. And I was like, okay, you know what? There's too many errors. I'm going to just completely restructure this database. I think I can do it tonight. Okay. That was last night. I spent about 3 hours on it until 10 o'clock at night. I did restructure the database, and then I started to think through all the downstream code changes and processes that I have to change now that the database is restructured. And I had a little oh shit moment. And then this morning, I spent another 3 hours writing like my plan for all the code that has to change and all the things that I have to do. And this was not a big database restructure. It was like, we have two lists of things that really should be one list of thing. And instead of being two lists, there should be a field on the one list. Like, it seems pretty small. I spent 3 hours figuring out all the dependencies and all the code that I have to change. And I might finish it by the end of the week. That was my one day project.
And I love it.
Am I supposed to be working on this week? No, I'm not. But it involves a process that we have to do daily. And so now that I've broken everything by changing the database, I have to finish it so that we can get back to our daily process.
And important.
That we're now behind on. Yeah. So that's my, it's never one day.
I love it. Great story. Okay.
We just recently, by the time this publishes, it'll be months ago, but whatever, published a blog post where someone asked us, I just inherited a giant backlog. What do I do? There's been years of items, and I think it had over 1,000 items. Like, it was giant. And someone asked our community this, and in the blog post, we shared people's responses, and there was really great stuff. Okay, so here's what I said. I would ignore the backlog temporarily. Just put it out of mind. It was a new person starting a new job.
Inbox so zero. Like,
just ignore it for a day and humor me. Okay, I always say, even if you work in a feature factory and nobody in your organization has heard of the discovery habits, you can still work the habits. So how would I do this? I would take 1 hour. I'm literally going to give you time boxes for everything. I would take 1 hour and I would try to map out my product's business outcomes. And I would do this by looking at my revenue formula and looking at how does my product make money? What are the outcomes my business cares about? Then I would look at my product and say, what are the leading indicators that contribute to those business outcomes? So what's my theory of value to the customer? What are some product outcomes? And then I would say, based on everything I've heard in this organization, which of these product outcomes sounds most important right now? Again, I'm time boxing this to 1 hour, so I'm not going to make a great decision. I'm just going to pick one because I have no analytics, because most companies have no analytics. I'm just making a judgment call.
And you're new to the company.
Yep. So 1 hour in. Now in hour two, I'm going to say, okay, based on what I know about this outcome, what have other people tried? What's in the backlog that's related to this? Now there's 1,000 items in the backlog, so this is where I'm probably going to recruit an LLM to help me identify the items in my backlog that are related to the outcome that I just picked. I might ask around. I might walk around the building or ask in Slack if I'm virtual. Has anybody heard anything related to this? Has there been any customer interviews? Are there support tickets? I'm just pulling in what's related to my outcome. Then I'm going to pick one or two things in my backlog that are related to the outcome that I think I can deliver on in my first week at the company. And I'm going to work on those things. And then while those things are being worked on, because it's not just me working on those things, I'm going to actually do this properly. I'm going to pick an outcome. Yeah. I'm going to go interview some customers. I'm going to ignore my backlog. I'm going to keep it around as an archive of like history in case I ever have to reference it. I'll probably just relabel that column in Jira Icebox and create a new backlog. And then I'm going to actually work the habits. I'm going to talk to some customers. If I can't talk to customers, I'll find the best proxy I can. And I'm going to start looking for what are the most important problems. And I'm going to decide what's the most important thing to work on. I'm not going to rank a whole bunch of things in a list. And the reason why I think this gets me to a similar place as what you described is that I'm still looking for themes. I'm still looking for the right problems to solve. And I'm not getting distracted by the 1,000 particulars.
No, that actually gets you nowhere. And what I really like about your version is that you highlighted this early wins that are important if you're starting out in a new role or if you inherit a new team slash product slash backlog. And oftentimes they are in this super bad shape. The good thing, there's a good message here. Once you done that, things will get so much easier if you later in your career inherit another backlog that is so long. So because if you have your tactics for how to cut it and slice it and dice it, you can put these practices into, you said like it's an hour here, an hour there, and then it was the third hour somewhere. And then you already had an idea for the next week. You and I know it's a bit more meetings to talk to team members, maybe to figure out if you're stepping on somebody's toes and yada, yada, yada. That's actually the way to go, I think.
One thing I would highlight is I want to reframe it. I'm not prioritizing what's in my backlog. Prioritization brings up this view of like a spreadsheet with 400 things and we're ranking them and there's a sort algorithm. Forget sorting.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm filtering. And I'm filtering based on two things. I'm first filtering on an outcome. What's going to create value for my business? And if I'm not being asked to deliver an outcome, I'm choosing an outcome. And the second thing I'm filtering on is something I've heard from a customer. So ideally, you're doing interviews and it's an opportunity. But on day one, I haven't done any interviews. I still need to find something to work on. So I'm using whatever other proxies I have access to just for the first cycle. I'm buying myself time to make a better next decision.
Yeah.
But it's the same habits. Filter by your outcome, filter by a customer need.
Yeah. And like in my book, I talk about if you're in onboarding about this time to first educated decision made. And this is basically, I did some interviews for the book and I figured that is 3 months for most product people. So when they start in a new job, they said like the first decision they were comfortable with making was like after 3 months of onboarding. But all of us know you have to do something in the meantime. And I really like how you describe the process. This is actually what is getting you there.
Now, if you're in onboarding activities that whole first week, we can make it week two.
Yeah, of course.
We don't have to be pedantic about is it week one?
No.
But I do think there is something about speed. And I know like some people are uncomfortable with like, are we just moving fast and breaking things? That is not what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm saying
the
sooner you move into maker mode and start doing the work, the sooner you have impact. And so you don't have to make a perfect decision. You have to find a thing to work on that gets you time to figure out the next thing to work on.
Yes, I agree. I have an illustration in my book that talks exactly about what you need in onboarding. Maybe we add that to the show note as well. And it talks about exactly this. So these early wins and that you need to form supportive alliances and how you do this by having this early wins because that creates trust and yada, yada, yada. So we make sure to add that to the show note.
For sure. All right. Anything else on prioritization?
I think we're good for now. There are so many more things to say about it, but there was a nice quick overview about how to fight the big ones, the big backlogs.
The big backlogs. Maybe we should retitle this episode, The Big Backlogs.
The Big Backlogs. Yeah. Prioritize big backlogs.
All right. Thanks, Petra.
Love it. Amazing as always. Thanks, Teresa.